I've got a couple resources up here. One is called Growing with God, and it is a there are 15 brief contemplative exercises in this booklet, and then the last book I published called 10-Minute Transformation, which is 12 spiritual disciplines that take 10 minutes or less. So it's kind of spiritual disciplines for busy people. And so if you're interested in those, you can pick those up. Appreciate you guys coming. I know it's a long day. Your minds are full. So I have a lot of pictures. So this should hopefully keep you engaged. Yesterday, this class is going over some of the material from a new book called Newsworthy. And basically the gist of this book is our culture looks at Christianity and the church in particular as kind of bad news. And we're trying to explore how can we be received in that kind of context as good news. And I suggested yesterday the way to do that is to rediscover the gospel. And the gospel is not how do we get off the earth and into heaven. The gospel is how do we bring heaven down to earth. So what the book does is explore basically 9 ways to do that, looking at the birth as part of the gospel, the life of Jesus as part of the gospel, the death of Jesus, the resurrection, the ascension, Pentecost, and the return of Jesus. All of those as kind of chapters of the gospel. And we look at kind of 9 ways that those parts of the gospel shape us and inform us to become good news in the world today. So what we're going to do today is just look at one part of that. We're going to look at the birth of Jesus and talk about how the birth of Jesus. So I'll turn off the front lights here so we can see these slides. Talk about how the birth of Jesus suggests one particular way of becoming good news in our communities, and that is by calling us to choose intimacy with our communities and the people around us rather than isolation from the people around us. There's a lot of things that we can learn from the birth of Jesus as we think about the birth as a strategy. So we're not just looking at the birth as, oh, this is kind of a neat thing, it's Christmas, we get to open presents. But what does the birth of Jesus teach us in terms of a strategy for being good news? How is Jesus good news through his birth? And what does that teach us about being good news in the world today? That's what we're exploring today. So again, my name is Chris Altrock. I preach at the Highland Church of Christ in Memphis, Tennessee. I've been there about 18 years and like to write. So this material is coming out of my newest book called Newsworthy. The Pepperdine Bookstore has several copies available, so if you like what we cover here, I'd encourage you to go by the bookstore and check that out. So we start at the Forbidden City in Beijing, China. Last March 2015, several of us from the Highland Church of Christ explored the Forbidden City in China. Anybody in here ever been to the Forbidden City? Okay. The Forbidden City kind of stands literally and symbolically in the middle of Beijing, China. The rest of the city was built around it. So it's kind of the heartbeat of the entire city of Beijing. The word forbidden in Forbidden City basically meant that everyone else was forbidden from entering it. Unless you had a very high status, you could not enter the city. You were forbidden from entering it. It was built as the home of the emperors. And it was made up of 9,999 and one-half rooms. And the reason for that was their understanding of heaven, what we would call heaven, was that heaven had 1,000 rooms. So the Forbidden City, the home of the emperors, had 9,999 and one-half rooms. It's just one-half room shy of heaven. So the emperors got to live almost in heaven. Pretty cool. while we were going through that, I got to touch this guy. Pretty mean-looking guy. He's lying. Got his paw on this round thing. This round thing, our guide told us, represents the globe. And guess who this represents? The emperor. So what would that mean? What would this symbolize? What do we think? Yeah, he's... Who has the world in his hands? Not God. The emperor. Right? He rules over the known world. He's got the world in his hands. So he's a pretty important guy. And the Forbidden City is pretty fascinating because it really communicates what the emperor's posture was toward the outside world. The emperor of China and the emperors of China chose a protective stance that created isolation between him and the rest of the world. And it was really symbolized by this massive wall that goes all the way around the Forbidden City. So if you wanted to get to the emperor, you know, soaring over the wall back in the day would have been unimaginable. It was too tall to really scale. Speeding through the wall would have been unthinkable. There were only five areas around the Forbidden City where there were three gates each. And of course, each of those gates would have been heavily guarded. The center gate in each of those five places, only the emperor was allowed to go through the center gate. And if for some reason you went through the center gate, you'd be killed immediately, because it was only the emperor was allowed to go through that. So you couldn't soar over that wall. You couldn't speed through that wall. And you couldn't dig under the wall and come up under it, because in the courtyards there were 15 layers of these bricks. So, you know, somehow you got under the wall, you'd come up under and bump your head under 15 layers of these bricks. All of that done to create this isolation between the emperor and the world around him. Now, if somehow you did manage to get over or through or under that massive wall around the Forbidden City, because you were forbidden from getting into where the emperor was, the emperor was still inaccessible, because the emperor had 9 bedrooms with 3 beds each, and he switched beds every night. So even if you got in, you had to guess which bed he slept in. So it was virtually impossible to get to the emperor. The emperor chose this protective stance of isolation from this world. And what we see in the birth, the first chapter of the good news, the first way in which Jesus acted as good news in the world, is Jesus chose a perilous stance of intimacy with the world. Jesus' first step into the world was a step of intimacy into the world. So Jesus lived in heaven, not a facsimile of heaven, not 9,999 one-half rooms. Jesus did live in heaven. But he chose to relate to the outside world in a very different manner. Jesus literally held the world in his hands. He didn't just have a neat little statue. But he acted in a manner very different from the emperor. He didn't make a forbidden city. He made an unforbidden city, a city into which all people would be invited. And so I want to spend the rest of our time just kind of unpacking and playing with Luke 2, verse 7. Because we learn a lot from this one verse. So she gave birth to her firstborn son and wrapped him in swaddling cloths and laid him in a manger, because there was no place for them in the inn. So we just want to reflect on these three lines here. She gave birth. She wrapped him in swaddling cloths. She laid him in a manger. There's three related things happening in each of those lines that teach us how Jesus became good news, how Jesus chose intimacy with the world, and three things that teach us how we can choose intimacy with the world around us, and thus become good news in our communities. So we're going to choose this first one here, she gave birth. So this first line, she gave birth to her firstborn son, shows us how Jesus chose hazardousness. The second line, she wrapped him in swaddling clothes, shows us how Jesus endured helplessness. And that last line, she laid him in a manger, showed us how Jesus endured homelessness. All three of these are related, but they teach us slightly different things about how churches and Christians can choose intimacy with our neighborhoods, our communities, our cities, our world, and become good news. So we'll kind of unpack that. So this peril of hazardousness. She gave birth to her firstborn son. I mean, just think about that. When Jesus chose to be born, she gave birth to her firstborn son. He was choosing a very dangerous path in drawing near to the human race. So let's compare that to skiing. How many snow skiers in here? We have a few. Okay. So you recognize the sign, right? What's the green sign? What's the green circle? Easy. What's this one?
Media.
And?
You're
going to
die.
You're going to die. Right. Although there are some like double black and triple black, right?
You're really
going to
die.
Yeah. Okay.
You want to meet Jesus.
Yeah. So when my brother, this is my brother Craig here, when my brother and I would go skiing and we'd be at the top of the mountain, my mom never skied, she'd stay at the lodge down at the bottom. So if we wanted to close the gap between us at the top and mom at the bottom, we could choose one of those paths. We could choose the easy way, the medium way, or the hard way. So if you think about Jesus, Jesus wanted to close the gap, unlike the emperor. He wanted to draw near. He wanted to become intimate with the world around us. Well, he had similar choices available to him. So Jesus could have chosen an easy way, a green circle kind of way. Jesus really could have just floated among us as a spirit. He could have just said, I'm not doing the whole flesh and blood kind of thing. I'm just going to come among them as a spirit. And that would have been the easiest way to do it. No birth, no flesh and blood. Just going to appear among them as kind of a ghost, an apparition, and, you know, do what I need to do. Zap in, zap out. He could have chosen more of a blue square, maybe taken on human flesh, but forego the burden of birth. You know, just maybe zap in as a teenager, or zap in as a full-grown adult, interact with us as flesh and blood, but not go through birth. But instead, Jesus chose the most hazardous path to intimacy. He chose to go through childbirth. And really, when you think about it, there's nothing very easy about that, is there, when it comes to childbirth?
But it's significant.
Oh, yeah, hugely significant, right?
Like the swaddling cloths in the manger.
Right, yeah.
The lamb.
Yeah, we're going to talk about the swaddling cloths here in just a second. Is there anybody in here that suffered complications at birth? Anybody?
No.
Were you a preemie? Okay. Yeah. As a child, anybody in here ever have a broken bone? Anybody as a child ever involved in a serious accident? As a child, anybody ever contract a serious disease? How about, do you have a child or grandchild who suffered complications? Anybody? A child or grandchild ever have a broken bone? Mm-hmm. Yeah, some. Child or grandchild ever involved in a serious accident? Or child or grandchild ever contracted serious disease? Okay, but we probably know children or grandchildren who have. I mean, being a child or going through childbirth is pretty tough. I was a preemie. My brother was a preemie. We were born 6 weeks early. I weighed 3 pounds, 10 ounces. Craig weighed 4 pounds, 12 ounces. So, I mean, what do you notice about that? Yeah. Poor me. Yeah. Poor me. That's what I'm thinking. This is me in the ancient early form of the NICU unit. Yeah, for 4 weeks. Craig was only there for 2 weeks. But childbirth is hard. Jesus chose to go through childbirth. And childbirth is still hard. Shelby County, Tennessee, it's where Memphis, Tennessee is. In 2003, we had 15 baby deaths per 1,000 live births. That's the worst infant mortality rate in the U.S., similar to places like French Guiana, Kuwait, and Lithuania. It dropped in 2012 to 10.6 baby deaths per 1,000 live births. In 2014, back up, zip codes had infant mortality rates 3 times the national average. Around the world, Centers for Disease Control says more than 23,000 infants died in the United States in 2013. U.S. News and World Report says there are more than 1 million miscarriages each year in the United States. She gave birth to her firstborn son. I mean, just birth itself, hugely hazardous pathway to intimacy that Jesus chose. World Health Organization reports in 2015, 4.5 million infants died before their first birthday. And then, so that's just today. Think about Jesus' day. One scholar of ancient Israel says 30% of children born in ancient Israel didn't live to reach maturity. One third, one of every three children didn't live to reach maturity. It's estimated in ancient Rome, the infant mortality rate was between 25 to 35%, so higher in ancient Rome. Another scholar estimates that in the poorest areas, as many as 50% of children born would not live to reach adulthood. So as tough as it is in our world to go through childbirth and early childhood, it is even worse in the ancient world. And yet Jesus chose to go through childbirth. So one of the things that means is Jesus sympathizes with the hazardousness of our life. I mean, he knows what it's like to go through hazard and peril in our life. And the message that we bring to the world is that Jesus understands that, you know. And what good news that is that we bring to the world today, that we tell the world today, that we follow a Savior who didn't remain behind a massive wall, who chose a path that forced him to endure the peril of hazardousness. But I think Jesus chose that path because he also wanted to encourage us to choose that same path. That Jesus chose this path of hazardousness, being born, because he wants to challenge us to do the same. He wants to challenge the church to do hazardous things in order to draw near to people in our communities. To choose to do dangerous things to draw near to people in our communities. To be what I would call a birthing community. To be willing to face peril to draw near to others. That's what it means to be a birthing community. Gregory Boyle is here on campus. Not everyone may have gotten the opportunity to interact with him. He's got a really fascinating story. And so this would be one example, I think, of someone who's kind of lived out this part of good news. So let me just read a little bit about his story. In the 1990s, so this is a local example. In the 1990s, there were over 90,000 gang members in Los Angeles. Nearly 2,000 people were dying each year, many of them from gang-related violence. Imagine that, 2,000 people every year. Law enforcement agencies struggled to contain the violence, much less change the hearts of those committing it. Enter Gregory Boyle, a Jesuit priest.
He decided the Christian faith had something to offer these gang members, that compassion could overcome aggression. So he started a program that became known as Homeboy Industries. It provides job skills training and employment opportunities for former gang members. He raises $10 million each year to keep the program afloat. It's dangerous, messy work. He's buried 200 young adults over the years who died from gang-related violence. The office is often the target of attacks, even bomb threats, but he, his congregation, and others continue to draw near to the gangs in spite of the hazards, because that's what Jesus did. In one interview, he recalled how things came to a head one night at the parish he preached for, the poorest parish in Los Angeles at the time. He and other church members had been reaching out to gang members, trying to get them to leave their lives of drugs and violence. Now gang members were hanging out at the small church building, smoking together in small groups, lifting weights in the church garage, taking classes because they'd been kicked out of schools. And he tells it this way. This did not thrill all parishioners, and the grumbling reached a pitch that forced me to call a parish meeting. The parish hall was packed. This would be either a vote of confidence in my leadership or an opportunity for the parishioners to tell me, here's your hat, what's your hurry? I didn't speak, but the E.F. Huttons of the community, when they spoke, people tended to listen. Teresa Navarro and Paula Hernandez needed only to stand and invoke Jesus. We help gang members at this parish because it is what Jesus would do. People applauded, and the parish never looked back. So there's a local example of Christians who said, we believe we've been called to be good news in this community. And there's going to be a big price for us to pay. It's going to be dangerous work. It's going to be a high price for us to pay, but we're going to do it anyway because we believe that's what Jesus would do. And I think the one place that shows us that is the birth. The birth of Jesus. Jesus chose this hazardous way of drawing near to the world around us as a model, challenging us to be that kind of community, what I call a birthing community, a community that would say, yeah, we would choose that hazardous way as well if it means that we could draw near to the community around us. That makes sense? Okay. So that's just one element of the birth. Another element that we see in the swaddling cloths, what I'd call the peril of helplessness. She wrapped him in swaddling cloths. So obviously, first century, 21st century, infants are helpless. Infants just can't do much for themselves. So not only is it hazardous to be an infant, but infants are very helpless. It just takes a lot of work to care for a newborn. And that's what swaddling represents. Swaddling is done to an infant because infants are helpless. They can't care for themselves, so infants are swaddled. Swaddling is just the wrapping of strips of cloth tightly around a baby. One of the more famous depictions of the Nativity showing Jesus swaddled comes from a painting by an artist named Giotto in the early 1300s in a chapel in Italy. So you see little baby bald Jesus here, wrapped up like a mummy, swaddled in these strips of cloth. And for a lot of people, this image of Jesus in the Nativity is pretty surprising because many of our Nativities show baby Jesus like that, right? All free except for the little strip of cloth, very nicely placed here. And you know, here it's almost as if baby Jesus is just saying, bring it on. Just give me all your cares. I'll take everything. Just put it in my hands. I'm all ready for it. I'm all ready to go." But in fact, baby Jesus needed to be swaddled. And Luke includes that nice little detail. She swaddled him in strips of cloth. Why? Because he was helpless. He couldn't care for himself. No infant could care for himself. So these tight bands of cloth simulated the pressure, the warmth of the womb. It was one of the most basic forms of paternal care. Babies were swaddled because they were helpless. God ends up using this several times in the Old Testament as a symbol of helplessness. God talks to Job about how he swaddled creation. Who shut the sea with doors when it burst out from the womb? When I made clouds its garment and thick darkness its swaddling band, and prescribed limits for it and set bars and doors. Or in Ezekiel, God uses swaddling to portray the helplessness of his own people. And as for your birth, on the day you were born, your cord was not cut, nor were you washed with water to cleanse you, nor rubbed with salt, nor wrapped in swaddling cloths. They were helpless, but there was no one to wrap them in the swaddling cloths. And so swaddling was a way of giving this basic sustenance that a newborn couldn't provide him or herself. So Jesus had to be swaddled because he was helpless. So again, Jesus chose this. He not only chose to be born, she gave birth to her firstborn son, but she chose to be swaddled. She's wrapped in swaddling cloths. Why is that?
It's because that was, when they were going to sacrifice the lamb, it was a perfect lamb, and they swaddled it and put it in the manger because they didn't want it to get hurt. So it's symbolized of Jesus being the perfect lamb being sacrificed. It was a symbolism.
I think there is a lot of symbolism going on here, even atonement kind of symbolism going on here. And of course, when Jesus is laying in his tomb, he's once again wrapped in cloths, and the same wording is used there. And so it's very interesting that he sort of ends his life in the same way that he begins his life here.
So important. Like, that's how the wise men, that's why it was so, like, they knew it was Jesus, because it was like the swaddling, the lamb, the perfect lamb. That's
the commentary. But at its most basic point here, this idea of helplessness, I think Jesus chose this path because he wants to show that he sympathizes with our own helplessness. And so what a good news message that is to the world. We have a Savior who doesn't stand behind a huge wall in a forbidden city. He chose this path that says, you know what, I know what it's like to be helpless. I know what it's like to need to be swaddled. But again, and I'm going to move ahead here, he chose this because he wants to call us to be a swaddling community. A community that swaddles those who are helpless. A community that says, you know, it's okay to be helpless. A community that says, if you want to be here, you don't have to have it all together. If you want to be with us, we will swaddle you. We will take care of you. You don't have to have it all together in order to be here. So the church becomes good news when it's transformed from just another place for those who have it all together to the one place for those who are falling apart. That's what it means to be a swaddling community. There's this great quote here from Rachel Held Evans in her book Searching for Sunday. I get a lot of emails from people who fit right into the church until the divorce, the diagnosis, the miscarriage, the depression. And what they find is when they bring their pain or their doubt or their uncomfortable truth to church, someone immediately grabs it out of their hands to try and fix it, to try to make it go away. Convinced the gospel is a product we've got to sell to an increasingly shrinking market. We like our people to function as walking advertisements. Happy, put together, finished proof that this Jesus stuff works. The world is watching, Christians like to say, so let's be on our best behavior and quickly hide the mess. Let's throw up some before and after shots and roll that flashy footage of our miracle product, blanching out every sign of dirt, hiding every sign of disease. But if the world is watching, we might as well tell the truth. And the truth is, the church doesn't offer a cure. It doesn't offer a quick fix. The church offers the messy, inconvenient, gut-wrenching, never-ending work of healing and reconciliation. The church offers grace. Anything else we try to peddle is snake oil. And so I think what she's saying is what I'm saying, and that is that really the best way of being good news in the world is to be a swaddling community, is to say what we're offering you is not a place where, you know, if you take Jesus, you're going to be suddenly fixed and perfect. But this is a community where it's okay to come in and be imperfect and broken and hurting. And what we're going to do is we're going to swallow you. And we're going to nurture you. And we're going to provide grace and such sustenance. And in Jesus, together, we'll find what we need. And so the birth of Jesus challenges us to be a birthing community, willing to face danger, hazards, to draw near to our community. It challenges us to be a swaddling community and to live out a truth that says to the community, if you want to be part of this community, what we're about, you don't have to have it all together before you walk in the door. We're willing to swaddle you. We're willing to nurture you, to bring healing and grace. And then this third line, she laid him in a manger because there was no place for them in the inn. So Jesus not only chose to be born, the hazardousness of birth, he not only chose the helplessness of birth, so the swaddling cloths, but he chose the homelessness of this particular situation of birth. So if you have children or grandchildren, you can think about the circumstances in which they were born. Our own children, our daughter was, when she was born, we placed her in a nursery in our home in Las Cruces, New Mexico. When our son was born, we placed him in a nursery in our home in Bartlett, Tennessee. When Jesus was born, he wasn't even near his home in Nazareth. Joseph didn't pull the minivan around to the hospital drive-through. Mary didn't strap Jesus into the new car seat. They didn't drive to the freshly painted baby room with the freshly purchased toys and crib. Instead, Mary laid Jesus down in a manger. Now, probably was not in a barn, as is often portrayed. But regardless of exactly where it was, it definitely wasn't a Hilton Inn or even a La Quinta. You know, it was the place where the animals were sleeping, and it was probably a manger that looks more like this, hewn out of rock. Probably not the kind of place most of us would feel comfortable putting our newborn down. It was definitely property that didn't belong to them, some kind of a feeding trough for animals. Not their home at all. And Jesus chose that. He chose that particular circumstance into which to be born. Why? Well, again, so that Jesus could sympathize with our own homelessness. You know, you think about the homelessness just in this country. Homelessness is counted on one night every year across this country. So when I was writing this book, the count for January 2014 was the most recent count. More than 500,000 people in 2014 were experiencing homelessness, sleeping outside or emergency shelter and transitional housing. 500,000 people. So pretty remarkable that our message to them is, we have a Savior who chose homelessness to enter into this world. In Tennessee, the figure is 9,000. In my city, Memphis, 1,600 people And so our message to them is, we have a Savior who understands that. But I think Jesus also chose that because he wants to call the church to be a community for the homeless. To be a manger community. A home for people who seem to have none. And of course today, I think that says something about our posture toward refugees and immigrants. In Memphis, we have a large population of homeless pregnant women. We have a ministry called FIT that ministers to them, families in transition. And then I think this says something about orphans. Timothy Hill Children's Ranch is one of the ministries that we partner with to serve children who are outside of traditional family context, orphans and kids like that. But even outside of just someone who has no home, you just think of all the types of homelessness, refugees, immigrants, orphans, foster kids. I mean, the list could go on and on. And I think Jesus chose this step because he wants the church to become good news in our community in that kind of way as well. So we go back to the Chinese emperor here. The word that's used to describe the way that he chose to engage the world is the word excarnation. Excarnation, it means to not be present in the world around you, basically. It means to not be present in flesh and blood. It means to distance yourself from the world around you, to not bodily inhabit the world around you. And I think most of us could probably imagine that that is actually the stance that some churches take with the communities around them. They choose the posture of excarnation. They're in the community, but they're not in the community. They're not bodily in the community. But what Jesus chose is not excarnation, but incarnation. It means to be present by flesh and blood, to close the distance, to be in the world, to bodily inhabit the world. And the way that he did that was through the manger. And so I think Jesus is calling us to become good news in the world today through these three things. To embrace situations that are hazardous, to be a birthing community, to become a swaddling community, and to say to the community around us, you don't have to be perfect, be part of us. We'll swaddle you. And to be a manger community that seeks to provide a home for those who have none. And that's how we become good news. That's how Jesus became good news. One of the ways that this all comes together was in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina. I'll read this story and we'll be done. About the time of the 10th anniversary of the landfall of Katrina on the city of New Orleans, a news program called This American Life told of the tour guides who showed the city to tourists in buses. Shortly after Katrina, tour buses frequently traveled to the lower Ninth Ward so people could see the destruction. But in 2006, the city council made these tours illegal because they were interfering with cleanup. Despite this ban, the tours continued. Finally, in 2012, a group of residents from the lower Ninth Ward went to the city council to demand an end to the tour buses. Gwen Adams, one of the homeowners, approached the city council, said this: "It really made me angry. I felt as if you're looking at me through an eye that says, 'Oh, look, there's another little animal in the zoo.'" Jamal Preston, another resident, said this: "Back when I was in school, like every day, I look outside, there's like a tour bus coming through, and there's like 50, 60 people on the bus. You know, the big air-conditioned, like super comfortable ones. You would never see who's on the buses because they wouldn't get off. They just come through and then leave. Like they're coming through just for the sake of, like, 'Oh, look at how terrible,' sympathy. Oh, but your sympathy is because something bad happened to people. Your sympathy is not based on the people that you actually met in the neighborhood that had to deal with it." But Jesus didn't just drive by in a tour bus.
He was born into our ward. He chose to enter into our lives in the most drastic and radical way. That's what made him good news. And when the church does the same, we become good news as well. So my challenge would be just to consider what would it mean for you to live out the good news of the manger. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.